Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
In his complaint, he says that Sarah, his supervisor, has been making inappropriate comments. She talks about having sex with her girlfriend, what they do to each other, and talks very graphically.
It's crucial when we get a complaint that we are investigating stuff based on the facts that we have got to hand, interview them formally, put the accusations to them. We need to do this in a clinical, formal and professional way. The cost if this goes wrong could shut your business. Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
Hello, welcome to HRER, episode 25. We've got a hot topic today, back on the sexual harassment train, circa Valentine's Day.
Yeah, who doesn't think about Valentine's Day when we talk about sexual harassment?
Every doggone day. We ain't done one since Christmas time, and we haven't really spoke since the Christmas party.
No, I mean, you say that as if something happened to the Christmas party.
It did.
When you beat Michael at shuffleboard.
Notice how, like...
Was that the highlight of your 2024, yeah. Ollie?
Despite... I won, but, like, the best part, the difference between me celebrating winning and beating Michael three times was...
Yeah, was you wanted big, to get that in three times on the record.
Every single game I played Michael at, I won. But yeah.
We know how to party at Heroes.
We do. It was a good do. I enjoyed it. It was enjoyable. We had a few hours, bit of snacks, and it was all above board, all appropriate as well.
Yeah, we did very well.
Anyway, I digress.
So, sexual harassment and Valentine's Day. What have we got today, Ollie?
Excellent. We've got, it's called When Does Banter Become Sexual Harassment? There is a line to tread there, isn't
Always.
There?
Always. I'm joking. But many times. Banter is often used when, you know, someone's crossed the line.
As an excuse, yeah.
But let's dive in.
Let's dive in with the email. So, hi, Lisa. I knew we should have done the sexual harassment training, sort of plug. I think we're in a bit of hot water here. We received a complaint from Jason. He is a junior member of staff who works with us around college. He's on a cleaning crew for two of our local commercial premises. Same crew generally each time he goes out. In his complaint, he says that Sarah, his supervisor, has been making inappropriate comments. She talks about having sex with her girlfriend, what they do to each other, and talks very graphically. When he's asked her to stop, he says he doesn't know how lucky he is. It is a teenage boy's dream. She doesn't say sorry. He doesn't know how lucky he is. It is a teenage boy's dream to hear such stories and that it's just banter. He says he has proof of the behaviour and has recorded some of their conversations. He also said that when they were out on a daytime clean, the client had a buffet spread ready to go out in the room they were cleaning. Sarah went out for a cigarette break and didn't wash her hands, took a sandwich, ate it, and then rearranged the sandwiches to cover the gap. It's a bit of a mess. Can you help us manage the relevant processes here? Is it banter or has a line been crossed? And have we got a health and safety issue as well?
So loads going on here.
It's a long old email.
Shall we? We'll dive into the sort of the glaring one first. Though actually, I suppose, depending on your situation, the smoky fingers in the buffet versus the issue here with some potential sexual harassment.
Yeah, the two are problems, but there could be different sort of levels of problems.
So we'll go into the potential sexual harassment first. Mm-hmm. So we've got what is a junior and actually quite a young member of staff
17.
Here. He's only 17. And then obviously the much more senior and the oldest older staff member who's his supervisor. Slightly unusual situation here in that we have got a female who is the potential aggressor, we'll say here, and the male being the victim. That's not me, you know, being biased or stereotypes or, you know, sort of waving the feminist flag here. Statistically,
the
numbers don't lie. Mm-hmm. Overwhelmingly, it is often the fact that it's a male who is the aggressor. In terms of the victim, that can be male or female. We do see male on male sexual harassment aggression in the workplace, but overwhelmingly the statistics and the figures that show us that usually it's a man. So this situation, the question I had with the client originally was, because they weren't quite sure, is this banter? What do we do with it? I said, if the boot was on the other foot here and it was a man who was the senior talking like this with a 17-year-old female.
Oh, there'd be hell on.
Yeah, and you can almost hear that. Oh, well, yes, you know, that would be dreadful. So it is still dreadful.
This is exactly the same situation.
Yeah. The fact that the genders have been reversed doesn't make this any less serious. So that was kind of the initial conversation that we had with this one when we got started. And it was one of those situations where it is absolutely ripe for that discussion on, well, what is sexual harassment? What is banter? Where is the line? You know, these were conversations. Is that still sexual harassment? Because nobody's been touched. Nobody's been assaulted. Is that still sexual harassment? So I suspect as we go through this, we're going to talk about, you know, what sexual harassment is, what banter is and isn't, and whether it's acceptable or not. And then, you know, obviously we've got the health and safety stuff to touch upon as well.
The first question, you kind of went into it a bit there. What's the difference between like banter and inappropriate behaviour? How can people...
So I don't think we can necessarily answer that without first talking about what sexual harassment is. So sexual harassment is where we have someone who is subjected to unwanted behaviour. So it's got to be unwanted, number one. Two, it's of a sexual nature. And it's got to have the purpose or effect of creating an intimidating, hostile, degrading, humiliating, or offensive environment for somebody in the workplace. So you'll notice I put some emphasis there on purpose or effect. So if I do something and I'm intending to sexually harass you, that's the purpose of it. Mm-hmm. That's sexual harassment. Hopefully that would go without saying.
Yes.
If, however, I do something, I didn't mean for that to happen, but it still had that effect. So it's unintentional, but it happened anyway. It's still sexual harassment. And this is a really, really key point because it's something that I repeat at the moment several times a day with clients where they'll say, well, we've done an initial investigation and the person who is being accused of the behavior didn't intend for it to happen. Well, it doesn't matter.
Are they just saying that?
It absolutely doesn't matter.
How do you prove that?
Well,
how do you prove intent?
But we don't need to.
Okay.
If it had the effect.
Okay.
That somebody has been sexually harassed or had the feeling of being humiliated or the dignity at work has been affected in a negative way, we don't need to prove intent. It had that effect. The legislation tells us it's purpose or effect. We don't need to prove that someone intended for it to be offensive.
Okay.
So we can almost take that out the equation. It might be something that's a mitigating factor. So what I mean by that is we go, yes, okay, it was sexual harassment, but the person is very, very sorry now that they understand, you know, it's a first offence. We can take all that stuff into account when we're deciding perhaps the sanction to issue.
Okay.
But from a legal perspective, it is still sexual harassment. We don't remove that just because someone didn't intend for it to have that effect. So the reason why I sort of overlabor that point is that then when we move on to discuss banter, when someone goes, oh, it was just a joke, oh, it's just banter, I didn't mean for them to get upset, doesn't matter.
It removes the argument.
So if their behaviour was unwanted by the person who has received it, it's of a sexual nature and it has that impact of, you know, creating a humiliating environment or distressing environment or offensive environment, We're within the boundaries then of sexual harassment.
Ding, 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 full house.
Yeah.
Next question. When an employee reports harassment, how should HR approach the initial complaint to ensure it gets investigated properly?
So this is a really interesting question. And it's a really good kind of topical time to discuss this. And we were talking about this earlier. So with the Blake Lively, Justin
Baldoni
situation.
That's him.
And I'm also going to talk about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard because when I discussed it with Michael, I made a comparison between that situation as well.
There's definitely comparisons there as well. There is.
Is when someone's been accused of something, depending on, say I'm HR in a company and someone accuses a senior colleague of sexual harassment, if it's somebody that I like, that I would never expect to behave in that way, where it's totally out of character and I think this person's a lovely, warm, family person and they're a really popular member of the company, your instinct and your initial bias is to go, well, that can't possibly be true.
How dare I offend their character?
And it's going to taint that investigation, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I mentioned the Blake Lively and the Amber Heard situation is in this mess that we've got with the Blake Lively and Justin Baldoni allegations, is there are people who know nothing about this situation, haven't been on set, haven't witnessed the footage, know nothing about the legal pleadings on either side, but based on their perceptions of the individuals involved and their public profiles, have decided who is guilty and who is not.
Yeah.
And when we look at the Johnny Depp Amber Heard situation, immediately Amber Heard in that situation was vilified because Captain Jack Sparrow could not possibly have done the things that she accused him of, despite the fact that he openly admitted to some of them.
He visits kids' hospitals.
Precisely.
He can't be a...
And we're not saying in any of these situations whether anyone has done what they've been accused of. But what we've got to understand in these situations is that we have got to take our personal feelings and personal bias out of the equation. And it's really, really important that we do a clinical and thorough investigation and that we don't let those prior perceptions of individuals and personalities taint something either way. Because what we've seen historically, particularly where we've got typically men in positions of power who perhaps can be very charming, have quite a strong following within a business, is that an investigation barely gets off the ground because of the sway and the strength of personality that they've got
behind
them.
They've got influence in that situation, yeah.
Precisely, where their voice is almost given immediately credibility based on the fact of how people feel about them.
See, I'm perhaps controversial. I feel like that's kind of been applied to Blake Lively a bit in that situation because she's obviously more known than Justin, but you didn't even know his surname.
No, I didn't.
Do you know what I mean?
No,
Justin.
I Justin. Yeah, you
we all know Blake Lively.
Pop culture knowledge.
We all know her husband, who's a very funny, successful man, yeah. But is there a dark underbelly?
And she's
to
best
people?
Friends with Taylor Swift. And you think, well, you know, if she says something, then it's true.
Must be. Yeah. She's got a great album. Mm-hmm. It's got. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's power dynamics is what we're going to come on to now, interestingly.
So it's crucial when we get a complaint that we are investigating stuff based on the facts that we've got to hand, that we are interviewing people in a fair manner as well, so that we don't sit down with, you know, the popular person at school and say, well, look, it's a formality that I'm here. And of course, you know, I don't think you could possibly have done this, but I've got to ask you these questions. No, interview them formally. Put the accusations to them. We need to do this in a clinical, formal and professional way, without showing any bias or indications either way. So we want to gather evidence. We need to establish, were there any witnesses? Have we had similar complaints in the past that perhaps have been brushed to one side that might suggest that we've got a pattern of behaviour? If it is one person's word against the other, what do we have that can swing the credibility either way? We have to look at both sides. We can't just take a complaint and think, how are we going to disprove this? Which unfortunately is something that employers have done, is that when something comes in...
To save the business money type thing.
To save money, or because perhaps there's someone that either they don't want to believe that they behave in that way, or operationally they think it's going to cause them difficulties if they have to find them guilty, and they potentially have to remove somebody from the business who they perceive to be important. So there is that knee-jerk response to think this person couldn't possibly have done that. What evidence can we find to disprove it? Rather than what evidence can we find to show either it did or it didn't happen? We have to be very balanced. We have to be very objective. And we have to be reasonable about the way that we do it. Because there's that favourite word that I've got. We have to be reasonable about how we do things because we're in the employment world.
You touched on it a bit, but how can power dynamics such as the supervisor-employee relationship here influence what is perceived as acceptable workplace behaviour? You just kind of mentioned it there. There's like the power balance of someone perhaps a bit more senior that if you go down that path, like they might cause HR problems down the road. Has that ever happened, for example?
Definitely. So where you've got someone who has a significant sort of holding on power, and it's something that I have dealt with personally when I've assisted companies, is someone who immediately, once they're cornered, you can see they're going to try and make things as difficult as possible for everybody who's been involved in that situation. So for the person who speaks up, they've already had to kind of cross a barrier to get
they're
to the point where they...
treading carefully.
Yeah, where they feel brave enough to kind of disclose this. So power dynamics 100% can cause a real problem. And it's really, really important that senior people, you know, if they're accused of something, that they engage with this professionally. Because if you try and disrupt an investigation or behave in a way that tries to deflect things away from you because of the power that you hold in a situation, it makes you look guilty.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, why not engage with the process and say, look, you know, I don't accept that anything has happened.
Nothing to hide.
But occasionally, you know, either there can be misunderstandings Or, you know, people do raise false allegations. That does happen. But I am here, I'm prepared to be questioned, and I'm prepared to give my side of whatever the story is. That is the way that it should be approached, rather than abusing your power or your position to try and derail an investigation. Because to me, that does look like a wiggling fish on a hook.
Have you ever had the kind of like, do you know who I am type response?
Yeah. 100%. This business can't operate without me.
Yeah. Do you get extra gratification when things go against said people? Or are you obviously impartial and so professional that
and
you don't?
I'm so impartial and professional. Yes, yeah. There's definitely gratification when you've got someone who's been a real wiggly fish who's been cornered.
Fish.
Yes, when you've got a fish on a hook.
Yeah.
It's like wiggling like mad.
That's a real modest way of saying that. Yeah. Real like PG, wiggly little fish. What role does training, like sexual harassment prevention training, play in reducing incidents and liability? We do offer this.
And the reason why training is so important is because in this situation where we've got Sarah who said these things to Jason and she says it's just banter, that is going to be her line of defense when we get to either investigation or if we get to disciplinary with this. She's going to say, but I didn't know that it wasn't okay to have banter at work, or she's going to frame it as banter. I didn't know it was unacceptable to say these things. And to strip that entire level of defense out, if we're able to say, but you did know, Sarah, because we trained you on what was acceptable in the workplace, where is she going to go with this then?
Out the door?
Well, yes, exactly. Where we have got her talking about sexual content with someone who's under the age of 18, who's told her to stop, if she's had the training, there is no excuse for that behaviour, because we have taught her this is not okay.
We're moving accountability from business to individual.
And we have got a duty to prevent this kind of behaviour from happening. So if we have got people who don't know where the line is, if we do have a culture of banter, what you have got to the tune of many, many multiples is lots and lots of risk running around your business, potentially having inappropriate conversations that they don't know whether they're unacceptable or not. And they don't understand that intention that we talked about. Purpose and effect. They don't understand generally that if something has that effect, whether they meant it or not, people often think that they have got this protective barrier of it was only banter. The training teaches them that that is not okay. And because we have got this preventative duty, the only way to prevent people from behaving in this way towards other people is to teach them that it's not okay.
Which is, it's crazy that you have to say that, you know, that we have to teach adults to behave.
It is crazy.
Do you know what I mean? That's crazy.
But unfortunately, we've had a culture that's been built over decades that says it's okay to have potentially offensive conversations and apologize for it afterwards when somebody pulls you up on it. We can no longer do that. We have a preventative duty. We have to prevent this from happening. So if we take this situation with Sarah and Jason, it's unwanted. He's told her to stop. Even if he hadn't told her to stop, the obligation isn't on the victim to try and rein in that behavior. If they suffer in silence and they say it's unwanted afterwards, that's perfectly okay as well. So, but in this situation, factually, he's told her to stop. It is conduct of a sexual nature. She is discussing her sex life with a junior member of staff.
With a boy.
Yeah. Well, even if it was with a girl. Girl on girl sexual harassment
like
can occur.
Man and boy.
Yes.
Do you know
yes
what I mean?
He's under the age of 18.
He's a boy, isn't he? He's a boy.
But it's sexually graphic detail that she is discussing with him. So conduct can be physical, it can be verbal, it can be in text messages, WhatsApps, so it could be digital. But talking to someone in a sexually graphic manner, whether it's not directed at them, if you're just telling a sexually explicit story, that is sexual conduct. Mm-hmm. So it's unwanted, it's sexual conduct. How many times can I say sexual in this podcast?
Could get a counter.
what's the algorithm going to do to my swiping after this?
Oh God.
So it's unwanted, it's sexual conduct, and it's causing this lad some distress.
Yeah.
He's not enjoying it. He doesn't like it. It's causing a humiliating and embarrassing environment for him. So it ticks all the boxes. It is sexual harassment. And for her then to just say it's banter, well, as we've said before, judges don't like it.
It's a cop-out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Proper cop-out.
Yeah. And as a minimum, the fact as well that she is a senior member of staff, she should be the one who's enforcing the rules, not the one who's putting a junior and a much younger member of staff in a situation where he's feeling he's being sexually harassed.
You'd imagine as well from a perspective that she's, I don't know how old she was, but I imagine she's maybe in her 40s, something
like
that.
She was early 50s.
Okay. Mm. So she's had enough life experience to know that's probably not how you speak to people, and to pick up on like body language and face signals that would indicate I'm uncomfortable with this.
But some people get kicks out of that when they feel like they're making somebody uncomfortable. You know, it is something that some characters thrive off. Well, yeah, but they do. That when they see they're making someone uncomfortable, they think it's funny.
Yeah, yeah. I find that funny, but not like
not in a sexual way.
Yeah.
Like, particularly where it's someone who's under the age of 18. Mm. So a question I often get asked is: this person a minor? It's that 16 to 18 grey area.
In what respect? Because like, you could argue that psychologically he's probably definitely a minor. At 17, you're not an adult, are you? You're not a man.
No, but then in some circumstances, the law says you're a child. In others, you're in the weird in between. Under the age of 16, this would be a safeguarding concern.
Oh, God,
you know, we'd be local authority probably involved in this situation.
Yeah, cops involved there.
The fact that he's under 18 makes me grossly uncomfortable. There is, you know, he can't legally bind himself into a contract. This is something where we're going to have to disclose it to his parents, because his parents co-signed his contract of employment because he's under the age of 18. So it brings in a whole host of other issues here as well, in terms of, you know, child protection, that this woman thought it was acceptable not only to discuss things like this in work, but to someone who, in the eyes of the law, is still a child.
Mom's going to kick her head in.
Yeah.
If she's not careful.
Yeah. And it's that whole, you know, what's the, they say in America, the whole mama bear thing, when mum comes, kicks the door in, and it's the whole, you know, protection element. But it's not acceptable in under any stretch of the imagination. And when we remove, you know, the fact that the gender dynamics reversed here, it should never even have been a question. This should have been treated as if it was, as you know, when they said, oh, you know, if a man had done this, yes, we'd immediately been all over it. Well, they should immediately been all over this, regardless of the fact that it's the woman who's the aggressor, and it's a boy, really, who's the recipient of the behaviour. One of the questions I do get asked about the training is, and in this situation, it probably would have caught this, should I just be training the line managers? You know, should I just be training the people who are responsible,
like,
for people?
Sort of thing.
More so that they're aware of the rules.
Okay.
So had they done that as a minimum, yes, it would have caught Sarah's behaviour, because she was a manager in this situation.
Yes.
However, it doesn't get us to the point where if a junior member of staff had behaved in a certain way, if we haven't trained them on what acceptable behaviour is, it doesn't matter that the line manager can spot it and pick it up. We've got to prevent it, remember.
Out of curiosity, what's top whack that business can be done for on this? Is it, I read like 50k per case.
That's not top whack. It's kind of at the moment what we're seeing in reported cases and in the press is that the awards are sitting between like £35,000 and £60,000
per employee
where this has happened.
Crap.
And because we're talking in discrimination realm, so sexual harassment awards come under that kind of band. They're uncapped. So there's no ceiling.
So for example, if there was numerous instances of this, these can pile up and be, and that number can grow in the single case.
Yep. So if, you know, you've got physical stuff that's occurred, or you've caused someone a mental injury and they've ended up in therapy, or someone's felt that they've had to quit their job and they're too unwell to work, you could be looking at hundreds of thousands of pounds in relation to this. So it's, you know, when people say, oh, I've got to take this to the board, and, oh, you know, if we've got to train everybody, there's a cost. The cost, if this goes wrong, could shut your business.
It's a recent change, isn't it? Like the whole
well, it's
on the business.
It's the preventing. So previously, yes, you probably could get away with just training your managers, because then if sexual harassment occurred, your manager goes, don't do that, it's wrong. And you can take someone through a disciplinary. So we've reacted well to it. You know, we've dealt with it with a firm hand. However, now, if we've got to prevent it, we've got to stop people behaving in this way. The only way that we can really do that at a level where we think, you know what, we've reduced our risk a little bit, or I believe I can stand in tribunal and say, judge, we did everything we could. We did a risk assessment. We circulated a policy. We updated documentation. We put it around the office and said, this is the commitment to our level of behaviour that we're all going to do. We trained everyone on how to spot it, how to report it, how to behave. We rooted out people where we saw that there was a risk and things were happening. So we did everything we could, and it still happened. You're not going to have the book thrown at you.
Okay.
Compared to the business that says, well, we trained our senior managers and we published a policy and we did a risk assessment, but We felt it was cost prohibitive to train everybody. Unless you're the corner shop where you're breaking even and you've got no money to pay your heating bills and pay the landlord, the judge isn't going to have it.
No.
They're just not. We're talking about the safety of people at work. We're trying to stop people being sexually harassed. Mm-hmm. And you're saying that you don't want to pay, you know, what is it, 30, 35 quid a head to train people. When you look at it in the bands of that level of proportion compared to what it could cost your business if it goes wrong, it has to be a no-brainer to get people trained on what is acceptable and what is not in the workplace.
It's a growing thing as well, like the sexual harassment in the workplace. Its figures are up percentage-wise from last year to this year.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more awareness and people are much more prepared to speak out.
Or do you think it's like more people talking about it? That's why
I do think more people are speaking out. I'd like to hope that we're not living through an era where people are just getting more handsy because, well, that's a trend. Let's hope it's that actually people are just more prepared to speak out.
Let's hope they're braver.
Yeah.
And they're not just trying to get a
And I
quick
think
book.
As well, the people, and I've read quite a lot around this where there's women in their mid to late 30s, early 40s, and there's this trend of them speaking out about things that happened maybe 10, 15 years ago. And people saying, well, why are you talking about this now? Is that typically they're in a place with their careers where their job is now safe.
For a safe environment to do it, yeah.
To say, you know what, I can speak out about this now because there's not going to be personal consequences for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can speak from personal experience about the behaviour that I had with partners and people in power. I was never someone who took behavior quietly. I was you know, typically someone who would address it immediately with the person across the table from me.
That's the Wigan in you, isn't it?
Yeah, possibly, you know, there was no kind of getting away from it. I was always someone who would speak out, but I can absolutely see, you know, and I always took the view, there's always another job. I can always do something else. If this is an industry where I'm going to lose my career for speaking out over my personal safety, stuff the industry.
Don't want to be here.
I'll go do something else.
Yeah,
nothing is worth that level of sacrifice for me.
No.
But I felt, you know, I was very lucky to be in a situation to have supportive partner, you know, family that would say, you know what, if the world falls apart, we're here to catch you. Whereas other people haven't necessarily had that luxury. So I'm never critical of someone who has taken a decade or two decades to speak out, to get themselves in a position of personal security where they can say, this happened to me. It's not acceptable. We have to be changing the world now. We have to stop this from happening. And that's why this preventative duty is so important. And it's so important that we teach people this might have been considered okay or banter or something, you know, that was part of a fun workplace in the past and just part of the world we're in. It's not anymore.
The world is now changing. Now type thing, yeah. Quick, we'll blast through these employee questions. That was mad sidetrack there. How should employees handle situations where they observe inappropriate behaviour but are not directly involved? Report a grievance?
They should report it.
Yeah,
speak up. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, tell HR. If you feel that you can't do it personally, you can do it anonymously,
okay.
But speak up. The only way to root this stuff out other than training is to call it out when it
happens. Culture thing, innit?
Yeah, if people know they're not going to get away with it, that if someone sees something, they're going to talk about it and report it, they're going to be less likely to behave in that way. So
set the standard wherever the camera is. Mm-hmm. Set the standard.
And if it happened to you and someone witnessed it, you wouldn't want that person just to be a passerby.
No.
You know, you'd want them to see the call for help, potentially.
Defend me.
Precisely.
Right now. Although, to be fair, I think to me, I'd be quite happy to do it myself.
Yeah.
But I digress. What happens once I report sexual harassment? Will I be paid pending investigation?
So if you're the victim of sexual harassment and you report it, or you're a passerby and you report it, there should never be a question about you being paid. So you shouldn't be suspended.
Mm-hmm.
If you are suspended for whatever reason, and I wouldn't advise it, you should absolutely be paid. Suspension isn't a disciplinary sanction. It's to allow space often for an investigation to take place.
Okay.
So you're still an employee. It's not a punishment. Absolutely should still be being paid. If you report it, you should expect to receive support. You should be offered the chance to speak to somebody from a welfare perspective to make sure you're okay. These things can be quite distressing, can be quite a lot of worry for you if you're the person who's reported
Absolutely.
It or has experienced it.
Anxiety. Yep.
And you should never, ever be penalised or subjected to any negative behaviour or blowback because you've reported sexual harassment. If that happens, that's a specific claim in itself. That's victimization. If you put someone to a detriment because they have reported sexual harassment, that is as bad as committing sexual harassment in the first
place. More money to pay out.
It's more money to
more
pay
money.
Out.
Yeah. Another
so
one.
We should never, ever, ever be penalizing people who report this.
No. Last one. What if it's a he said, she said scenario?
So that happens a lot. It's rare for serious sexual harassment to be done openly. It's often, you know, after work when everyone's gone home, there's no witnesses, there's no record of what happened. So we are not a criminal court. We don't have to prove beyond all reasonable doubt that something happened. It's what do we reasonably believe based on the evidence that we have.
Okay.
So when we take both sides of the story, if we think for whatever reason one person is more credible than the other, as long as we can explain why we think someone's more credible and we're reasonable in taking that view, we can believe one over the other. And it's a myth that employers, when they're in a situation where it's he said, she said, they go, oh, it's a tie. Well, we'll do nothing about it this time.
A tie?
Because we can't go one way or the other. Yeah, essentially,
like
it's a tie. Yeah. That they go, well, we can't prove it either way, therefore we'll do nothing. But actually, by doing nothing, you're essentially the person who's the potential aggressor. It's almost one point to them.
Got away
They've
with
got
it.
They've got away with
got
it.
Got away with it, yeah.
So it's... we.
Surely you're indirectly saying as well, you don't believe the other person.
By saying we're not going any further, there is that situation
that is a response.
Where the victim feels, well, nothing's been done about it, and the potential aggressor has essentially got away with it.
Yeah.
So we can believe one over the other. We just have to be able to explain why in clear terms and be reasonable in the belief that we're holding.
Collect your evidence as well before you do that, I assume. Yeah. Like gather all
and
your
document your reasoning.
Yes, absolutely. Lessons learned. What emergency measures can HR departments take to prevent sexual harassment in the workplace?
Train your staff. Train everybody.
Buy our stuff.
if they are breathing oxygen in your workplace, train your staff.
You'd be amazed how many people don't know how to behave in the workplace.
It's remarkable, but yes. So number one, train your staff. Two, do a risk assessment. Three, publish a policy. Four, put up a standard of behaviour in the toilets, on the walls. You know, have a commitment to this is how we are going to behave. And refresh the training every year.
Set the goddamn standard.
Exactly. And if something happens, deal with it. Be shown that you take a robust response to these things.
Proactive, reactive, be a real go-getter. Yeah. Closing thoughts, summarise our key themes. What happened?
So we did dismiss Sarah.
Yeah, rightfully so.
Rightfully so.
Yeah,
I mean, in this situation, we actually had some CCTV as well, which helped. And had we not dismissed her for the sexual harassment, the whole smoky fingers in the buffet thing that we've kind of skipped over, to be honest, would that have been enough to dismiss her? It wasn't her buffet. So she had her fingers in somebody else's buffet, which is never okay.
That sounds like a real bad euphemism.
It does, but it wasn't her food. And when you're sending contract cleaners into client premises, there's a level of trust that they have to uphold. So not only, you know, by taking the sandwich, but then to rearrange it all to hide the gap and, you know, smoky fingers, just blech, from a hygiene perspective, just no. And from a cleaning company, you expect things to be clean.
Top.
So would it have been enough? I mean, look, she's a senior member of staff, setting an example for a junior member of staff. We'd have been looking at that fairly robustly. It depends on how much the client kicked off, whether it be enough to dismiss or not. But we didn't really need that one in this situation. We had that the sexual harassment was the reason why we dismissed. We did throw the health and safety and the theft in. I don't know why I'm doing that. She stole the sandwich, it's still theft. It was in there as an allegation, but it wasn't the reason we dismissed it. The sexual harassment was.
No, it was a side order to the main course, obviously. Mm-hmm. That's all we've got time for on that one, but that was interesting.
Yeah, interesting, legit. Topical. Valentine's Day. Don't sexually harass anyone in the workplace just because it's Valentine's Day. You don't get a pass just because it's February the 14th. There's the message.
As if it needed saying.
Oh, though I have, I don't Go know if it'd be another pod or just a little one. I did have a little love note one. It was very cute. It wasn't, you know...
You got a love note?
No, not me. One of my clients, someone within their business got a little love note.
From a colleague?
Yeah.
Was it well received?
No.
Oh, no.
No.
Save it for another day.
Yeah, we'll save that one for another day. But yeah, from a Valentine's perspective, please don't send love notes in the workplace if you don't know how it's going to be received.
That never goes well.
No.
Never goes well, workplace romance.
You put in a little voucher for her to buy herself a present as well. I don't know why I'm saying it like it's cute. It's still for sexual harassment.
It's a bit like pity as well. Like, yeah, piss of yeah, pity
it was a shame,
well.
But there we go. So no, none of that. Keep it professional at work. If your colleagues, you know, if you don't know how it's going to be received, just don't do it. Valentine's Day isn't an excuse. And that, again, it was banter judge. No, but it was Valentine's Day judge.
No.
Not going to fly.
No. Keep it clean.
Yeah.
Keep it clean. Yeah. Yeah, sweet. Thanks for everyone for watching. That's episode 25. We're motoring on. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers. Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even HRER at heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect, but by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier, and more productive workplaces.